Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Tommy McNeil reporting. President Barack Obama is on the last leg of his final trip to Lima, Peru's capital, where he will try to reassure U.S. allies in the Asia-Pacific region following the election of Donald Trump. The president focused on Asia and the Pacific, calling it a pivot or an Asia rebalance, the cornerstone of his foreign policy. That could change substantially after he leaves office in January. The president and his free trade allies have pushed hard for years to put the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Agreement, or TPP, into action. But on the campaign trail, now President-elect Trump has suggested that he would disengage from Asia, saying TPP was not in the best interest of America. More than 1 month after the start of the battle for Mosul, the United Nations reports a marked increase in the number of people leaving densely populated areas of the beleaguered Iraqi city. VOA's Lisa Schlein reports.
The UN reports more than 40,000 displaced people are sheltering in formal camps run by the Iraqi government in three governorates. The UN Refugee Agency currently has six camps open, hosting well over 14,000 people with a capacity for 54,600. Thousands of other displaced people are living with relatives and in informal settings such as unfinished construction sites. A spokesman for the International Organization for Migration, Joel Millman, who has just returned from Iraq, says he was most impressed by the resiliency of families, many of whom have been forced to flee their homes several times. He tells VOA the relief felt by people liberated from Islamic State was palpable. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And this is VOA News. The official Saudi press agency says a Saudi-led military coalition has declared a 48-hour ceasefire in Yemen. The truce is set to begin at local time this Saturday, the coalition said in a statement. The truce would be extended if the Houthi rebels allow humanitarian aid deliveries to besieged cities. Yemen, on the southern edge of the Arabian Peninsula, has been in the midst of a civil war since September 2014. U.S. President-elect Donald Trump is filling the first of many top positions in his administration and has chosen three staunchly conservative Republicans to take vital roles. Those are Senator Jeff Sessions as his Attorney General, Congressman Mike Pompeo as Director of the Central Intelligence Agency, and retired Lieutenant General Mike Flynn as his National Security Advisor. All three candidates who have been loyal to Trump throughout his unconventional campaign are now hardliners who will head his national security and law enforcement teams. Sessions strongly backed and advised Trump since the beginning of his presidential campaign. Pompeo, from the central state of Kansas, was among the first group of conservative Tea Party congressional members to be elected in 2010. Flynn, a decorated combat veteran, served as Trump's go-to national security advisor during the campaign. He does not require U.S. Senate confirmation, unlike Sessions and Pompeo. Thousands of anti-government protesters marched in Malaysia's capital, Kuala Lumpur, Saturday, demanding the resignation of Prime Minister Najib Razak after over his alleged involvement in a multi-billion-dollar misappropriation scandal. The yellow shirt protesters of the pro-democracy group Birsi were chanting "Power People." Many were banging drums and other instruments. A heavy presence of riot police was seen on the streets as the main roads leading to the city center were closed off, blocking protesters from gathering there as planned. The demonstration is unlikely to lead to a resignation. He has so far weathered crisis, consolidating power by cracking down on dissenters and curbing media groups and activists. Egypt has sentenced the chief of the journalists' union and two of the group members to 2 years in prison for harboring fugitives. The ruling was handed down Saturday against the union head and two other journalists who were allowed to pay the $615 bail pending an appeal. The charges stem from a police raid earlier this year on the union's headquarters to arrest two journalists wanted for their protest against the Egyptian president's decision to transfer Egyptian sovereignty over two strategic Red Sea islands to Saudi Arabia. I'm Tommy McNeil in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington.
We hope to finish the printing of that ballot by Sunday, Monday latest. You know, it took us about 2 weeks to print the parliamentary for 275 different constituencies.
The Electoral Commission of Ghana stays the course to complete the printing of ballot papers to be used for the presidential election.
People see it in the neighboring countries, such as Sierra Leone and Ivory Coast. If they can have balanced justice there, why can't we have balanced justice here? And it certainly continues to undermine the rule of law and justice when people look and see that it looks like it's selective justice, not balanced justice.
Some Ivorians criticize the International Criminal Court for unequal justice in the West African country.
Culture is a psychological collective element, which you cannot just deal away with, you know, like a switch. I mean, the court should be humane enough when it comes to punishment against such offenses.
And a Malawian court convicted a 45-year-old man for abusing traditional sex customs. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The Electoral Commission of Ghana says security officers, journalists, and Electoral Commission officials who will be working on the day national elections are to be held in December are scheduled to participate in special voting a week before the entire country goes to the polls. The printing of the ballot papers to be used for the presidential vote will be completed early next week in preparation for the December 7 general election. This after the printing of documents for the parliamentary poll were completed last week. For more regarding the printing of ballot papers, I reached Eric Jakpasu, spokesman for the Electoral Commission of Ghana.
The presidential ballot, we started printing last Sunday, and we hope to finish the printing of that ballot by Sunday, Monday latest. You know, it took us about 2 weeks to print the parliamentary for 275 different constituencies, which meant that we had to develop plates for 275 constituencies before we started the printing. By that of the presidential, we needed only one template to print the same ballot for the entire country. And we've almost done. By Sunday, we would finish with the printing of the presidential ballot.
Once the parliamentary ballot papers have been printed, where is the process now? I understand it's in the regions, but when do you expect to dispatch it to the polling stations?
As soon as we finish printing the presidential ballot at the printing house, together with the police and some party agents, we convey them straight to the regional capital where we cross-check them and then keep them at the regional police headquarters. Hopefully next week, we'll start the distribution from the regional headquarters to the various constituency centers where we still keep them at the district police headquarters and then wait the days of distribution to the polling stations.
Well, we understand the controversy that sometimes comes as a result of the printing of particularly the presidential election. Security-wise and the cooperation of these participating political parties, what is the situation like?
Before we print any ballot paper or any sensitive election material, what we do is that we inform the police, we inform the Bureau of National Intelligence, and then we notify all the political parties to send their agents, okay? Then security-wise, you know, all the printing houses are provided with closed-circuit television cameras, and then we commence the printing. So around the clock, we run shifts day and night, including weekends, to print so that together we all take stock of the quantity, the serial numbers, then we baggage them and then distribute them to the regional police headquarters. So as we speak, security around the materials are tight and everything is on course. We've not had any challenges yet.
What about the declaration of the results sheets? What is the situation with the printing of those?
Yeah, we started the printing of the declaration of results sheet yesterday. And we have to the end of the month to finish the printing. But we hope to finish even before the end of the month. But by the timetable, the period allotted for the printing of the sheet is between 17th and then the 30th of November.
I know those who will be working on the day, journalists, security officials, and even some officials of the Electoral Commission that will be administering the election, would have to vote ahead of the election. With regards to the special voting, what are the preparations for it, and how soon will this be done before the elections?
Okay, rightly, you've said it all. Per our rules, per our regulations, the security services who provide security on election day, election officials, and then the journalists who will be covering the election across the entire country are required to take part in special voting at least 7 days before the main elections. We have received all the applications from all these people. We have printed the registers. I think we're just about to finish the printing of the presidential ballot and then the declaration of results sheet. So if you go by the rules and regulations, we are having the special voting on the 1st of December 2016.
Eric Jakpasu is the spokesman for the Electoral Commission of Ghana. He spoke with me from the capital, Accra. Meanwhile, violent clashes between supporters of rival political parties have raised concern about security. For VOA, Francisca Kakra-Forsing reports from the Ghanaian capital, Accra.
Ghana's Center for Democratic Governance released a survey this week that says 54% of Ghanaians believe political parties or candidates are very likely to use violence in the upcoming elections. There have been several incidents during campaigning this month. The Ododo-Diodio constituency in Accra has seen 3 violent episodes between supporters of the ruling National Democratic Congress and the opposition New Patriotic Party.
There is this uncertainty amongst a lot of people for the fear of the unknown.
Local resident Ni Ahinakwa Nunu received a blow to the eye during an altercation on November 9 between the NDC and MPP parliamentary candidates, which turned into fisticuffs as youth groups came to defend their political candidates, including MPP candidate Nilante Bannerman.
There was this other guy who was on a motorbike, pull the machete and strike it on the ground. So Bannerman had to run into the house. Another also pulled a gun, fired shots. So I went back into the car out of fear. After firing the shots, the man just finished, put the gun down and then punched me in the face. The area guys started throwing bottles at them. There's the young guys that were just across by just started to scare them away and also get the situation under control.
The police recently foiled a similar incident at the home of the main opposition leader and presidential candidate Nana Akufo-Addo at Nima. Both sides have traded accusations about who is to blame for the altercations. The United States, European Union and Britain issued statements condemning the violence. The ruling NDC responded Thursday, accusing the international community of malicious propaganda in favor of the opposition. The U.S. Embassy in Accra rejects that accusation, saying it has not taken sides. In Accra, Professor Michael Tego says frustration over the poor economy and a lack of understanding of the democratic process fuels tensions.
If you have growing unemployment among the youth and they can only find work around election time where party officials go around mobilizing them to campaign for them, there's the likelihood that there will be violence.
Ahead of the election, police announced a 1-month amnesty for people wishing to turn in illegal weapons. The Kofi Annan International Peacekeeping Training Center in Accra released a survey estimating there are about 1 million unregistered firearms in Ghana. But police officials say they are up to the task of securing the vote. Superintendent Cephas Arthur is the Director of Public Affairs of the Ghana Police Service.
And we're going to have about 4-tier security arrangement. The first one is going to be the security officers who will be posted to the polling stations to provide security for the exercise. And it could range from 1 to 3, depending on the nature, the characteristics of that particular polling station. The second tier will be patrols. And then after these patrol teams, we'll have officers standing by at vantage positions across the country in the constituencies. We'll have a fourth tier, which will be our friends from the military. They will be about the remotest ring. And that is when things are getting out of hand. And the pandemonium is almost breaking loose.
He said security will be tightened in potential flashpoint areas. Francisca Kakra-Forson for VOA News, Accra.
This week, an Ivorian judge ruled that the trial of former First Lady Simone Gbagbo may proceed without her. Her husband, former President Laurent Gbagbo, also faces prosecution at the International Criminal Court, or ICC. Supporters say the former first couple has been let down by the international judicial system since, they said, both sides of the Ivorian conflict were accused of human rights violations. Dr. Alan White, former chief of investigations for the United Nations Special Court for Sierra Leone, was recently at the VOA studios here in Washington, D.C. I asked him about his take on the trial of the former first Ivorian couple.
Well, unfortunately, there have been many critics of the lack of balanced investigation and prosecution, at least the prosecution side in Ivory Coast. Certainly those that were involved on the Gbagbo side, including former President Laurent Gbagbo and his wife, were deemed to have committed crimes that were significant enough that should be brought before the court. Same thing with Charles Blay Goudet. Mm-hmm. So there were some. But there's this victor's justice where the other side has seemingly escaped justice. For example, Guillaume Soro, the current Speaker of the Parliament, was involved in war crimes dating back to September 19, 2002. Which the court has jurisdiction. He's continued to be engaged in lawless activities to include committing crimes against humanity and war crimes during the period of 2002 all the way up to the election. And there were allegations that he was involved in post-election violence too, including hiring former Charles Taylor's people, Benjamin Yachan, Zize Maze, and then also he was involved in the execution of Ibrahim Koulibaly.
Wouldn't this undermine the credibility of the International Criminal Court, particularly in Ivory Coast, and that could, you know, spur others on to say, okay, we're pulling out?
Well, certainly it could. And during my time with the Special Court for Sierra Leone, it was very important that we demonstrated to the people that it was balanced justice. So we went after all parties, all warring factions. Didn't matter who they were. And of course, as you know, we were the only tribunal to indict a current sitting head of state at that time, Charles Taylor, and successfully prosecute him. The same exists now. People see it in the neighboring countries, such as Sierra Leone and Ivory Coast. If they can have balanced justice there, why can't we have balanced justice here? And it certainly continues to undermine the rule of law and justice when people look and see that it looks like it's selective justice, mm-hmm. not balanced justice, because people want a restorative and retributive justice. And although they will not be able to prosecute everybody, certainly Guillaume Soro and many members of the former, which currently exists still, the Force Nouvelle, that leadership, none of them have been indicted and prosecuted yet. They continue to destabilize the region. As you know, Guillaume Soro was involved and indicted in an alleged coup attempt in Burkina Faso. And he continues to create instability in Ivory Coast and the region. So this is something that when people see this, not just Ivorians, but people that support international rule of law and criminal justice, take a step back and say, why isn't there balanced justice? We're going on 6 years, over 6 years. Where's the justice? So this does certainly cause credibility issues for the ICC.
Guillaume Soro has been alleged to have committed all these crimes. The ICC said, well, it's taking its time to investigate and bring everybody to justice. However, it appears he's getting away scot-free. Why isn't the ICC going after him if there are all these allegations and proof of evidence against him?
Well, I do know that they have opened up an investigation on the other side. However, seemingly there has been ample time and ample evidence and well-documented atrocities, like I said, from September 19th through post-election violence, and current activities to include the coup attempt in Burkina Faso, because that expands into a continued criminal enterprise, and he's been involved in that with a number of people. And with the documented killings of 70 gendarmerie, which the High Commissioner of Human Rights has documented, there are reports available at their disposal that they can access to. There were 100 people killed in Korogo in 2004 timeframe that he was responsible for. And, of course, the execution of Ibrahim Koulibaly, which has been public information, as well as other incidents. So you have pre and post, and it's not just me, but it's other people that I talk to worldwide in international criminal justice.
If there are witness protection issues, why hasn't the International Criminal Court being effective in protecting these witnesses so they could get what they want to go after so-called bad guys?
Well, one of the problems that I have with the witness protection of the International Criminal Court, it's not specifically attributed to any one person, but it's, to me, it's defective the way that it's set up. For example, the special court, even though by statute the registrar's office is responsible for witness protection, in any other rule of law situation or law enforcement situation, the protection of witnesses are done by the law enforcement or investigative agency. Mm-hmm. You're the ones that develop the initial contact. You're the ones that maintain contact with them before trial, during trial, and after trial. And the international community's thoughts on this is that there must be a neutral party. Well, when you have a neutral party, such as the Office of the Registrar that's protecting the witnesses, they don't have the close bonded relationship that you have. Now, the argument is these are the court's witnesses, not anybody else, and the prosecutors buying the witness testimony. Those allegations are everywhere. They're in the U.S., and the bottom line is it always comes out in court.
Dr. Alan White is the former chief of investigations for the United Nations Special Court for Sierra Leone. He spoke with me from here in the nation's capital. In South Sudan, the Joint Monitoring Ceasefire Commission, or JMCC, the body of overseeing the implementation of the security arrangement in the 2015 peace agreement, says it has finally put in place guidelines for cantoning forces of the SPLAIO. For VOA, Waki Simon Wudu reports from the South Sudanese capital, Juba.
A breakthrough in forming the guidelines for the process of cantoning opposition forces as required by the peace agreement was reached today after a two-day workshop. Lieutenant General James Ajongo, chair of JMCC, highlights some of the guidelines.
What is the location that you needed for you to put to establish as a cantonment? What are those who are supposed to come to the cantonment? Who are them? Who are they? Those who are eligible to come to the cantonments. Are they soldiers with arms? Are they soldiers who are just trained and they are not armed? Are they medical personnel? Are they wounded heroes? Are they other support personnel, like the drivers, like the mechanics, like cooks? These are some of the things that we need actually to clearly put online, so that when you put up the cantonment, then you know now who is coming to the cantonment.
Ajongo says the lack of guidelines on how to canton the forces has been a challenge since the establishment of the JMCC. So far, there are still no forces that have been cantoned. But he warns that lack of resources is likely to remain a challenge unless the international community helps pay for it.
If you look at the amount that is required by this cantonment issue, for us to manage one cantonment area in 1 month, it requires us as government to avail more than $100,000 for 750 men in one cantonment in 1 month. So this is one thing that we need actually the regional partners, the international community, to think about it. If they want us to really go in implement the agreement, then there's need for the support of the process.
Ajongo says so far there are 6 cantonment areas required for the forces that need to be cantoned, 4 in Equatorial region and 2 in Bahr El Ghazal. He says 4 of the cantonment areas in Equatoria have been identified. The 2 days meeting brought together partners of the security arrangements in the peace agreement, including UNMISS and JEMEC. Chapter 2 of the peace agreement calls for cantoning the SPLA-I forces as part of security arrangements that will later integrate them into the SPLA in government. Although it is 8 months since the formation of the transitional government of national unity, Ajongo says no cantonment sites have been successfully created. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
A Malawian court has convicted a 45-year-old man accused of practicing traditional sex customs, deflowering young girls and widows that were outlawed 3 years ago. Malawian President Peter Mutharika ordered the arrest of Eric Aniva due to concerns that he may have spread HIV infections in the course of his work as a practitioner of kusasa, fumbi, and removing dust and feces, the local name for a hyena. For VOA, Lamek Masina reports from the court in Zanje, Malawi.
Feces is a traditional custom in southern Malawi. A man is hired and paid to have sex with widows to exorcise evil spirits that may bring death to the bereaved family. Kusasa fumbi is another custom practiced in the area, hiring a man to sleep with young girls who have reached puberty in order to prepare them for married life. Both of these have been around for centuries, but of course they do not fit with modern laws and social systems. Magistrate Innocent Nebi told a jam-packed court Friday that it was proven beyond reasonable doubt that Eric Aniva had engaged in harmful and illegal practices. One of the 6 witnesses who testified against the 45-year-old defendant was a woman who said Aniva asked to sleep with her soon after the death of her husband. Aniva and his fellow practitioners of sleeping with widows are known as hyenas, after the name of the custom in Chichewa, the most widely spoken language in Malawi. He pleaded not guilty to the charges against him and told VOA after Friday's court proceedings that he believed he is still innocent. He says no one complained to the court that he slept with her, and that the other thing that people should know is that he was doing this before the passing of the law. He says when this law was put into effect, he was given the responsibility of asking his fellow hyenas to stop the practice. Malawi prohibited feces and similar practices in 2013. Aniva says he stopped comforting bereaved widows in 2012. State prosecutor Jembegezo Banda asked the court to give Aniva a harsh sentence to serve as a lesson to others who are violating the law. But Aniva's lawyer, Michael Gobach-Peter, asked the court to give Aniva only a suspended prison sentence.
Here we're dealing with a cultural practice that has been there for hundreds of years against a law that is only 3 years. Culture is a psychological collective element, which you cannot just deal away with, you know, like a switch. I mean, the court should be humane enough when it comes to punishment against such offences.
Chipeta said he will likely appeal if the judge disregards his plea.
We can't talk much on the details now because there's still sentence coming. But most definitely there are issues that we feel are worth appealing against. The details which I think we can discuss after the sentence is done.
Aniva faces a maximum sentence of 5 years in jail. The court is expected to deliver its verdict on Tuesday. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Nsanje, Malawi.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. Right now, it's time for music from our African collection. Enjoy.
Africa lady, oh, aye. See, I sing in the song for Panya, aye. And I dance in the dance for Panya, oh.
I would do anything for Panya.
Anything, yeah.
And I thank you the Lord for Panya.
Oh, yeah, what is my baby name? She's my fine baby,
baby, yo.
She's my African lady,
lady, oh.
Panya sweet like a chocolate. When she come around, she heavyweight. She a dance, she a move immediate, baby. Yeah, yeah. Aya, what is my baby name? Aya, what is your baby name? I request for my baby girl. Panya scatter the fluff for me.
Panya.
And I thank you the Lord for Panya. Too much love I have for you.
Abi,
hey.
Aya, what is my baby name? Aya, what is your baby name? For my baby girl, Panya scatter the fluff for me.
Control my body, oh, 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 o one in a million. I swear to God, say you're the top of the world. Hey, mommy, you are bad and sharp. Hey, you are so nice. I try you, my career. There's something about you, girl. Girl, say.
Girl, I just want to love you right. Because so better, we just want to have fun. Better, we just want to burn castle. So, cause you give me your love and you give me your heart. Baby, I will never tear it apart, yeah. Only you, they make me happy, yo. Only you, they make me happy, yo. And I feel like a celebrity, yo. The way that you rock in your body, yo.
You know, say my baby's a pretty fine, yeah. You know, say we just wanna have some fun, yeah. Cause now you and they make me happy, yeah. And I'm willing to spend all my life with you, baby. I need for better, for worse, yo. We have a fire, comfort, yo. Carry you to my damn, yo. I give it to you, baby. So I say, make it just follow me.
Yo, kiddy, yo.
Follow me,
yo, kiddy, yo.
Melody, melody,
yo, kiddy, yo.
Harmony, harmony, yo, baby, yo.
Don't only you they make me happy, yo.
lovely with your beauty. I'm loving your booting, so break up for me like a broomstick. Yeah,
in your mother, mushy, mother, mushy. Men ain't for me, they was for me, they got me. They put for me, they was for me, they got me. What in your mother, mushy, mother, mushy. Men ain't where to go and on the football, they got me. The boy to go and on the football, they got me. What?
I yell, they love me.
That was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sally, producer Douglas Impuga, and our engineer for today, Nashwan Kali, but not forgetting the ever-present Ambassador Kolebu Suleiman Tarawale, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, don't measure yourself by what you have accomplished, but by what you should have accomplished with your ability. I'm your host, Peter Clotte in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Earlier this month, the house of Ghanaian presidential candidate Nana Addo-Dankwa Akufo-Addo was attacked. The United States Embassy in Ghana condemned the assault, saying violence has no place in the electoral process. In the period leading up to and following Ghana's elections on December 7th, the United States calls on all actors to remain peaceful and respect the democratic process. The United States does not support a particular candidate or a particular party. We support democracy, said the U.S. Embassy statement. We will continue to work with the freely elected government of Ghana, just as we always have. The United States urges all parties to make clear to their constituents that any violence or attempts to use intimidation to disrupt the democratic process is unacceptable. This will be the country's seventh poll since the return to multi-party democracy in 1992. President John Dramani Mahama is running on the ticket of the National Democratic Congress for a second term. Five other candidates qualified to run for the presidency. Ghanaians from across the political spectrum have worked hard to build one of the leading democracies in Africa. State Department Press Office Director Elizabeth Trudeau said, "We specifically call on candidates, their parties, and their supporters to reaffirm their pledges to renounce violence and settle any disputes through the judicial process."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.